Welcome to Healthy Mom, Healthy Baby Tennessee, a podcast brought to you by the Tennessee Initiative for Perinatal Quality Care. TIPQC exists to improve health outcomes for mothers and infants in Tennessee through our quality collaborative that will identify opportunities to optimize maternal and infant outcomes across our state and is funded under a grant contract with the state of Tennessee. The Healthy Mom, Healthy Baby Tennessee podcast is designed for medical professionals and for patients and families across the state. We will focus on all aspects of the perinatal period with special attention to reducing our maternal mortality rate. This podcast is brought to you through a cooperative agreement with the Alliance for Innovation on Maternal Health.
Welcome to the Healthy Mom, Healthy Baby Tennessee podcast, brought to you by the Tennessee Initiative for Perinatal Quality Care. I am Dr. Lister, maternal-fetal medicine specialist at Vanderbilt University Medical Center and TIPQC's Office of Health Excellence. We are excited to have Jenna Linton from the Tennessee Language Center joining us today to discuss best practices for working with spoken language interpreters. Jenna Linton grew up in Atlanta, Georgia, where she started learning Spanish at the age of 12. After studying abroad in Argentina and later receiving her bachelor's degree in Spanish and geography from University of Georgia, Jenna left the United States and spent the next 7 years living abroad, including short stays in Ecuador, Chile, and Peru. She settled in Buenos Aires, where she spent the next 5 years. After returning to the United States in 2019, Jenna began her career in interpretation. She became certified as an English-Spanish medical interpreter by the National Board of Certification for Medical Interpreters in 2020 and recently renewed the certification in early 2025. She is also a court-registered interpreter in the state of Tennessee. Jenna currently works for the Tennessee Language Center as a training specialist, educator, and program manager for the variety of courses, workshops, webinars, and presentations offered by the agency. We are so honored to have you join us today, Jenna. Welcome.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
So you were obviously just very passionate about your work. Can you kind of give us a story of how you got involved in medical interpretation and why you chose this as your life's work?
Sure. I think like a lot of interpreters, because I was bilingual, it was happening in a very informal way already for several years. I just didn't realize what I was doing. But I had worked at schools and in other places where I was being pulled in to help facilitate communication. And I eventually figured out that this was actually a career. And, you know, people do study in university for this. And I'm sure, as your listeners know, they can go on and go into the UN and the State Department and all these different places and work as an interpreter. So I discovered that this really was a career and just checked all the boxes for me. Love of language, working with people, communication. And then also I've always had a personal interest in the human body. You know, it's just a fascinating, amazing thing, what the human body does. And so medical interpreting really piqued my interest in learning more about the human body. And after getting into medical interpreting, I've always kind of wondered to myself, maybe I should have studied to be a nurse or a doctor. If I could go back in time, maybe I'd do that because it's so interesting.
You made an interesting point about like the medical body and that kind of being the niche that you wanted to fill. Can you kind of give us an idea of what distinguishes a medical interpreter from other types of interpreters? And what kind of role, what specific role does a medical interpreter play and maybe should not play?
Yeah. So if you compare, for example, the role of a medical interpreter versus a court interpreter, they're serving the same basic function, but they're really seen in a much different way. And they really act in different ways in the sense that a medical interpreter is kind of considered part of the medical team. And the most important goal, just like the medical team for the medical interpreter, is the well-being and health of the patient. In the court system, it is not the case. In the court system, you really have to be a completely neutral party. You're not there for the non-English speaker, and you're not there for the lawyers or the judge. Like, you are completely neutral in the situation, whereas the medical interpreter tends to have more of a relationship with the medical staff or the patient. There's a little bit more, you know, it's a less of an adversarial position for the interpreter to be in the medical area. And so that's an interesting difference. And it's more like interpreters that you see that work in schools and community interpreters, where they're there sort of as part of the team to make sure that there's good outcomes for everybody involved.
Can you expound on whether or not advocacy is a part of one of the roles of the medical interpreter? And then more broadly, what are the roles? What are the core roles of the medical interpreter?
Yeah, so medical interpreters have four roles, and all medical interpreter training courses will teach these four roles. And they're typically taught as, they're typically visualized as a triangle, where advocacy is the top of the triangle. So you can imagine that the very tippy top is the smallest area. So the main role of the medical interpreter is to be a conduit, to facilitate communication, to sort of create an environment where patient and provider are speaking directly to each other and mimicking what that environment would look like if they were actually speaking the same language. There is a role, an advocacy role for medical interpreters, and that can vary depending on where within the medical system the interpreter is located. But we do see that for staff interpreters in different hospitals, they tend to take on a little bit more of the advocacy role. So their triangle might look more like a square, where they are, because they are a part of that staff and they know their team members and they know those patients a little bit more intimately, they can tend to take on more of that advocacy role, doing things like making the rounds and popping their heads in to the rooms, asking the patient if they're okay, if they need something, do you need me to communicate this with the nurse for you? But I think for medical providers, it's a good thing to keep in mind that the main role of the interpreter is just to facilitate communication, not to be an advocate. And that will be a helpful way to think about it from the perspective of the provider, because a lot of interpreters do work as independent contractors. And so you'll have different interpreters coming and going into your facility. And that's the way that they're going to function, is as a conduit and only as an advocate in the case that the patient's health is genuinely at risk.
What are the two other roles you mentioned, advocate as well as a conduit to communication? What are the other two of the four roles that are central?
Yeah, so the first role is the conduit. And then number two is clarifier. Number three is cultural broker. And number four is advocacy. And really, clarifier and cultural broker, in some sense, kind of support that primary role of conduit. Clarifier, because if you didn't understand something, if you didn't hear something, if you need to ask for repetition, you know, the interpreter needs to make sure that they know how to do that so that the message ultimately is completely accurate. And then cultural broker is a role that they'll play to also make sure that communication is happening between the two parties, because sometimes there are cultural issues that can cause misunderstandings. And so they'll step into that role when there's a cultural issue that's preventing the two parties from effective communication.
Speaking about communication, what are some of the best practices for effective communication from your perspective?
Best practices, like from the provider's perspective?
Between providers and interpreters and patient, like kind of that triangle effect between the three parties.
Sure, yeah. I think for sure, making sure that everyone knows how the interpreter will work is really helpful, which means that maybe a minute before the session starts, allowing some time for the interpreter to explain how they will engage in their role so that both provider and patient are clearly understanding how all of this is going to work. And usually the interpreter in that moment is going to say things like, I'm here to facilitate communication, to repeat what you say exactly as you say it. So feel free to speak directly to the patient or directly to the doctor, because I'm going to repeat your words exactly as you said them. And that also make sure that you pause and allow for me to interpret, because the longer the person goes on talking, the more the interpreter has to remember and then repeat back in the other language. And so if you pause more frequently, that enables a more accurate interpretation, because there's only so much the brain can take in, the short-term memory can take in. So when we pause frequently, we allow for the interpreter to render a much more accurate interpretation. And, you know, that also you don't need to use phrases like he said or tell him. Or the idea, again, is to create this environment where that would mimic an environment of two people speaking the same language. So there's something in some cases somewhat robotic about what the interpreter does. They're almost like a Google Translate, where it's coming in one language and going out the other, all with this intention that the provider and the patient can communicate and build trust between each other.
What about if family members offer to interpret for their loved one in the clinical setting? Are there any boundaries that should not be crossed, or situations where it would be okay for a family member to interpret?
I think there's definitely situations where it's okay. For sure, children should not be interpreting. There's a lot of issues with children interpreting beyond just what we can imagine. The issues to be using our own common sense. There's also legal issues there. And so using children as interpreters is not good practice and should not happen. I think using family members as interpreters, I think that it's okay. Sometimes it's the only option if it's a language where you actually can't get that interpreter. But I think that the provider and the patient, they should really keep in mind that someone, just because they're bilingual, doesn't mean that they have training to be a medical interpreter. And so what you see with family members or friends interpreting is that they don't have the medical vocabulary, for example. And it may even be like basic medical vocabulary that they lack. And that can cause miscommunications. And then also they don't necessarily accurately interpret the message. They don't, again, have that training, so they may summarize. And you as the doctor are not necessarily going to want this person to summarize what you've said to the patient, because that person doesn't have the training or the medical knowledge or anything to accurately summarize what you've said. And that's a lot of time what happens if you don't get a professional interpreter, is that they're just kind of like summarizing a few points that were said by the provider, and that can also cause miscommunications. I have had situations where I was called in as an interpreter and the family did not want me there, but the doctor was insistent that I stay because they had used the family to interpret in previous encounters and there was a lot of miscommunication, and it was an oncology patient who was taking some pretty serious medications. And so these are the type of situations that generally we just want to avoid. So it's just proceed with caution, I would say.
I think it's really good advice. And at certain places, it may be if there's a hospital policy that an interpreter, a medical interpreter, needs to be used in well-defined clinical situations, then that can probably mitigate maybe some of the awkwardness that might come when a family might feel insistent that their own family member interpret when it's not appropriate. So are you aware, is there a policy that you're aware of that kind of stipulates when it is acceptable versus not, or is it kind of a hospital by hospital kind of decision?
As far as I'm aware, it is hospital to hospital. There is guidance. You know, there's a Title VI requirement to provide language access, which is not, there's recommendations that the DOJ has put out that go along with that, but they're just that. They're just recommendations about best practices. They're not laws in and of themselves. So I would say it probably varies from hospital to hospital. I know that many hospitals will have a policy where if the patient refuses interpreter services, they're within their right to do so, but they need to sign something just so that the hospital has documentation that they did try to provide a professional interpreter, but the patient refused to have a professional interpreter. And I would imagine, I'm not part of a hospital system, so I couldn't say for sure, but I would imagine there's similar policies when it comes to, for example, older patients who are being taken care of by their daughter. Let's say you have a father and really like the daughter is taking care of him and the doctor ends up basically just having conversations with the doctor and the patient's not much involved in their own care. These situations happen in any language. So I would suspect that the policy maybe has, or excuse me, the hospital maybe has policies or protocols around those types of situations that they follow. And that might be, you know, something that could mirror the type of policies or procedures that the hospital could follow when it comes to family members interpreting, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that's really good advice. So what about with phone interpreters? What do you think the best practices would be if you have a situation where you're communicating maybe abnormal test results over the phone or conducting a telehealth visit over the phone? What are your thoughts about how best practices are modified for phone conversations?
Yeah, this is a really great question. And I will provide in the chat a link to some resources about this, because I know this is, telephonic interpretation is used a lot and it can be tricky for different reasons. The biggest things I usually tell providers when they're working with telephonic interpreters is, first of all, keep in mind the interpreter can't see. So for example, what happens is the doctor will, you had mentioned they're maybe showing some results. And a lot of times the doctor or the nurse practitioner, whoever it may be, has the tendency to use their finger or their pen to point to something on the paper and say, okay, here's this number, that's looking good. Here's this number, that's looking good. This one we need to bring up. And they might go through each number, but then when the interpreter goes to interpret, the visual is gone for the patient, right? Because when the interpretation comes, now the doctor has taken their pen away from the paper. So my first recommendation is keep that in mind, right? So if you're going to point out something visually, do it in chunks, little sections. This number, this one's looking good. And you point to it on the paper and you leave it there as the interpretation happens so that the patient has that visual of what you're pointing at on the paper and what you're saying. Then you go on to the next number, right? This one, your hemoglobin's a little low. We're going to work on bringing that up. And then leave your finger there on the paper where you're pointing while the interpreter interprets. So it's a small thing, but it can make a huge difference. Mm-hmm. And then the interpreter also, they don't have visual cues. So we talked earlier about like the clarifier, the cultural broker role. Well, sometimes the interpreter knows that there's a miscommunication because of the body language or the confused face of the patient. But when they're on the telephone, they don't have those visual cues. So they may not really be able to step in and intervene when they suspect a miscommunication as effectively. So it's just something to keep in mind. And then also another big thing is just making sure that people are really pausing. So when you get on the phone with an interpreter and you have the patient there, I really strongly recommend taking those first few minutes to establish how it's going to work. Introduce yourself as the doctor, let the interpreter introduce themselves, and then make sure that everybody knows, like, hey, who's in the room, and make sure that they stop and pause and let the interpreter interpret before the next person speaks. Because again, there's no visual. So if one person speaks after the other, then there's no connecting the interpretation to who said it.
I see. Yes. So when there's like emergency or high pressure situations that can often happen in the hospital, if a patient is, you know, there's fetal distress and there's a need for an emergency C-section or there's heavy bleeding that needs to be treated, what are your thoughts about how we can employ interpreters during those high-risk situations? And what are some of the recommendations when we are in those kind of emergency situations?
Sure. And, you know, those are tough thing to deal with. And let me just take a minute and say that as an interpreter, I'm so amazed by the work that doctors do, not all your and staff, you know, nurses, all of them. Not only is your job already very difficult, but then having to work with an interpreter and work with patients who speak a different language, it's super challenging for folks that are already in pretty challenging positions. So these are tough situations. And with these high pressure situations, there's a tendency to, because time is of the essence, we don't want to get an interpreter. That's, you know, I would recommend getting an interpreter as best as possible. So hopefully the hospital system would have a telephonic interpretation line where they can quickly get someone on the phone and their staff would be trained on how to get someone on the phone quickly, so that the interpreter line, the phone number should be right there next to the phone, very easy to access, so that an interpreter can get on the phone very quickly. And the reason I say, just because it's a high pressure situation and time is of the essence, even in those cases, don't skip the interpreter, because that's when huge mistakes can happen. And I'll also link to this particular article for your listeners as well. But there's this sort of famous case that we talk about a lot in the interpretation world, a true story of a patient who went into the ER and used a word, intoxicado, in Spanish that sounds like intoxicated in English. Mm-hmm. And so the doctors, he was in a comatose state, and the mom said that. And the doctors didn't get an interpreter, so they just hear intoxicado, and they treated him as if he had a drug overdose, when really what he had was severe food poisoning, which is what intoxicado means in Spanish. So the words sounded the same, but the treatment plans were quite different. And right. This resulted in him becoming quadriplegic. And there was a massive lawsuit and a settlement from the hospital and all of this. So it's just a story to remind folks that even in those situations, making sure you really understand what's going on is going to ultimately save a lot of time and money. So that would be my recommendation, is just making sure that staff who work in those emergency situations or in any area of the hospital, they have the phone number to get an interpreter on the line, easily seen on the wall next to the phone, wherever it needs to be, and that they know how to get an interpreter on the phone instantly. Because with these telephonic interpretation lines, it's usually within a minute that you can get an interpreter on the phone.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Such a really vital resource to deliver safe patient care. So thank you for highlighting that. Have you seen mistakes similar to that, or are there other kind of case studies that you could highlight that really emphasizes how we can avoid common mistakes? What has your experience been for providers, and what are some of the common mistakes that maybe people have made, and how can we avoid those?
Yeah, I don't have any more specific cases off the top of my mind. I will certainly look into that and provide some links to the listeners. But I think just getting professional interpreters who are trained in medical interpretation is so important. And this is where I see a lot of mistakes, because a lot of hospitals will consider their bilingual staff to be sufficient interpreters. And the reality is that they don't have the training and interpretation that goes, as I mentioned, to knowing the vocabulary, having memory capacity to make sure that the message gets fully interpreted and nothing is left out or changed or omitted. You know, they have training in cultural competency and recognizing cultural misunderstandings. And then they also do have that advocacy role where they can continue to support medical staff in other ways. And so having qualified interpreters is super important, and making sure that advocating for yourselves as providers to have that quality service is, here's another example I can think of. I was just talking the other day with a friend who works in a clinic that serves patients with no insurance. And they have like a quota that they have to meet. I think they have to see like 15 patients a day at least or something like that. And most of these patients, probably 70% of them, don't speak English. And the conversation that we had really centered around the fact that if the clinic itself had professional interpreters, that the time would be much reduced, because a person who doesn't have training as a professional interpreter, who doesn't have the vocab, who doesn't have the memory skills, who doesn't have maybe simultaneous skills where they could jump in and interpret at the same time the person is talking, is going to have to ask for repeats. They're going to get confused, and it's going to be a lot of back and forth. Whereas if you have a professional interpreter in there, that allows for you to reduce the time it takes for the message to go back and forth, right? And that's important for providers, because you guys don't have a lot of time. And a lot of times you are under these pressures, this pressure to get in as many patients as you can. And it's burdensome for you to have to use an interpreter because it makes the whole session so much longer. But if you're using professional medical interpreters, that's going to be your best way to get those particular types of sessions done as quickly as possible.
Yes, definitely. I agree. I have found medical interpreters super helpful with facilitating the office visit. What advice do you have for family members and patients who typically use an interpreter?
Yeah, similar kind of best practices where you're ensuring that you're pausing to allow for the interpretation to happen, that you are just speaking directly to the provider or the medical staff, not using he said, she said, tell him, tell her phraseology, because it's not necessary. The interpreter is repeating exactly what is being said. And that also that for patients and families, that they keep in mind that the interpreter is, they are an expert in language. They're not the doctor. They're not the medical staff. They're not the nurse. They don't have medical training. A lot of times, the patients will ask questions of the medical interpreter because, you know, they speak their language and that makes sense. But the interpreter is not in a position to ask questions about, to answer medical questions about what will this medication do or how was I supposed to take it and things like that. So they should be directing their questions towards the provider, and the interpreter will help to make sure that their question gets to the provider.
Excellent. Excellent. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk with me today. As we start to wrap up, is there anything else that you would like to add to, whether it be for providers or for patients and their families, as to how to have a smooth next appointment visit?
Sure. And thank you so much for having me and giving me the opportunity to talk. My last comments would be, first of all, just to commend you all for doing this, for making an effort to understand how to work with interpreters, so that you can do your jobs better, you can serve your communities, the people that you're seeing, your patients in a better. It's really wonderful. And yeah, just keep in mind the medical interpreter is there for everyone's benefit. They're there to support and create an environment where patient and provider can build a trusting relationship so that the patient has good health outcomes.
Thank you so much for your time.
You're welcome. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Healthy Mom, Healthy Baby Tennessee, presented by TIPQC. TIPQC is funded under a grant contract with the state of Tennessee. Healthy Mom, Healthy Baby Tennessee is brought to you through a cooperative agreement with the Alliance for Innovation on Maternal Health. Do you have ideas for a future guest or topic, or even have a question you would like answered on upcoming episodes? Visit www.tipqc.org, that's TIPQC.org, and click on podcast to submit suggestions and questions to our podcast team. Make sure to subscribe to our podcast to be the first to know when new episodes are available, and find us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube to stay in the loop with our active projects and other relevant news relating to perinatal health in Tennessee.